Okay, without further ado, let's go to our last speaker, Francois DeBrons. He's from the General Electric Corporate Office in Connecticut, where he's the program leader for GE's healthcare initiatives. His responsibilities include creating, connecting, and supporting active consumers, and defining market mechanisms to reward providers for better performance. He's an officer and director of Bridges to Excellence. This is a coalition which includes large employers like Ford, Procter & Gamble, UPS, and Verizon that focus on rewarding physicians for better quality care. He also serves on the advisory committee for the U.S. Center for Medicaid and Medicare's Doctor Office Quality Demonstration Program. He's a member of the steering committee of LeapFrog, which is a group of 160 healthcare purchasers who reward hospitals and physicians for quality care. He's earned a master's degree in finance and tax from Paris and an MBA from Dartmouth. He's completed military service, where he served as a platoon leader in a light cavalry regiment. Previously, he started a small asset management company with a partner focusing on real estate. The business grew to managing a portfolio of several hundred million dollars and 30 employees. So Mr. DeBrons has a very interesting background. He has degrees from this country and abroad. He's headed up a business where he's been responsible for meeting a payroll. He's served in the military, and he tells me that he even has experience in prison. But let me be clear, not as an inmate, but as a volunteer. He volunteers weekly to teach Bible study at a local correctional facility. So his topic today is transparency and paper performance, building a real business case for better quality health care. Let's welcome Mr. DeBrons.
Get the clicker. Thank you. Yeah, if reforming healthcare wasn't hard enough, I decided to talk about the Bible to inmates. One of the charts that Scott showed earlier, I think is instructive in what I'm going to talk about. It's that sawtooth chart that shows how adaptive the healthcare market really is. Because whenever you think you've got it licked, where the costs are going down, it comes back up. And when you think the costs are going to skyrocket into never land, it starts going down again. And it shows that there's just an incredible amount of ability for the system to adapt. And many of us think that some of that ability is partially due to the fact that we haven't done really a good job at all in reducing the obscurity that covers the entire market. And it's obscurity in multiple ways, both in terms of the cost of the services that you get, which you only find out really much after the fact, and the quality of the services that you get, which again, sometimes, most of the time, you only find out much after the fact. So consumers in this environment, but purchasers as well, are basically going into it blind. And if you understand that, it becomes pretty clear that it is a dysfunctional market because there is no information off of which people can make rational decisions. So a lot of what we're going to try to focus on, I'm going to talk about, is how to try to shed some light into the healthcare market to enable, hopefully, all of us to make much better decisions. And I think this first slide shows an example of how the market mechanisms fail to really function in healthcare. Two hospitals in this particular market. This is looking at quality outcomes in terms of delivery. And it also looks at the volume of services that the hospitals have gotten in this column, okay, as well as post-fact down the road, once you've been able to add all the costs associated to the delivery, the total charges that were imputed for the care of the patients. So when you look at this, it's pretty clear to see that most people have made the wrong decision. If they had made a better decision, the market share of the two hospitals wouldn't be basically equally split. It also shows that as purchasers, we've basically failed to create any appropriate incentives in the marketplace. Because if we had created more and better incentives in the marketplace, there's a likelihood that the price difference between the two facilities would be much narrower, and that both facilities would probably be delivering care at a much higher level. And so that's our dilemma. It's how do we end up by solving a lot of our problems until we've been able to at least address this core issue, which is we have no real idea about either the cost or the quality of the services that we receive. So as we think about this marketplace, you know, we try to really truly imagine a better environment, an environment in which consumers can make better, more informed decisions, have costs linked to those decisions, are sensitive to both the cost and the quality of the services they purchase, but also are sensitive to their personal behaviors and their health behaviors. And again, a lot of that can be done in terms of benefit design. A lot of that can be done in terms of transparency in the system. But we need to act, I think, collectively to try to get to that level. Obviously, if you have good mechanisms on the patient side, you need to have equally good mechanisms on the provider side. And we want physicians and hospitals to compete for patients, but to compete for patients for the right reasons. Not because of the billboards that they can put on the side of the interstate, but because of the quality and the cost of the services, the value that they deliver in the marketplace. And we don't want that information at the highest level because it's meaningless. It doesn't mean anything that St. Mary's is better than Merida. In fact, if you don't look at deliveries, but you look at another procedure, the chart on the prior page is probably flipped, right? Merida does a better job than St. Mary's. And you see that all over the place, everywhere in the country. So we need good information, not at the overall hospital level, but at the procedure level. And we need good information about physicians, again, not at the physician level, but really in terms of drilling down on what they do specifically. And finally, as purchasers, and Scott mentioned the fact that states are purchasers and big purchasers. As purchasers, we have an absolute responsibility to reward the plans that are going to create innovation in the marketplace. If we don't do that, then the cycle just simply doesn't work. We select plans. If those plans aren't doing appropriate value chain management, aren't creating the right mechanisms at the provider or the consumer level, we basically have nothing. So what do we focus on? Well, if you focus on these three things, you're probably going to end up in a slightly better place than we are today. There may still be a lot of adaptation in the market. We still may see a lot of sawtooth type of effects. But what we're hoping, at least, is that the variation from peak to trough goes down dramatically. And I think we can achieve that. Functioning markets always have peaks and troughs. But what you see is a reduction in the peak-to-peak effects. So what do we want to do? We want to insist on full transparency. And there's an incredible role that the state can play in this. Many states across the country have done so. Wisconsin can certainly take a leading role in that as well. Adopting benefit designs that are going to be more conducive to making the right decisions. And HSAs or HRA type accounts are a way. They're not the only way, but they are a way. Large companies like ours have increased deductibles or have increased copays that patients pay, not as a means to cost shift, but as a means to cause them to think about their decisions. So if you take a $500 copay for a hospital, and as a purchaser, you waive that copay for certain hospitals, that's going to cause someone to think about their decision. And if that copay is waived for the right reasons, for the right facility that delivers true value, then you've got yourself at least a game. And finally, contract with plans that offer this value chain management. I mean, in our businesses, and most of you are, you know, you may be state legislators, but you work, we all have jobs, you all work for businesses. We do value chain management all the time. We evaluate our suppliers. We try to figure out the best deals that we can get so that we can give the best deals to our customers. Why don't we do this in healthcare? Why have we decided not to do this in healthcare? The answer is, from the healthcare industry, it's because you can't measure. And I'm here to tell you, that simply is not true. We can measure, and I'll show you how. And we've done this. We do this everywhere in the country. In this state, we recently changed in this area to the Alliance for exactly the reasons that I talk about. Chris Kramer and his group do a fantastic job. They're very innovative. They think about this stuff all the time. They try to drive transparency in the market. They've headed up the leapfrog rollout in this market. And, you know, I think that's the reason why we need to encourage that. And if it costs us a couple of dollars more in administrative fees, it's well worth it because we need to drive positive change in the marketplace. Now, caveats. Like anything, when you do something, you got to be thinking about what are the intended and unintended consequences. And I think on transparency, the trap that most people fall into is it's not invented here, so let us try to reinvent the wheel trap. And I'm urging you not to do that. There's enough measures that have been nationally accepted that we don't need to invent measures. We can just adopt the national measures. Activating consumers, very important. But you had better make sure that you've got something to activate them on. You've got enough of a supply of good performers that you don't create supply-demand imbalances. So those are the things that as you try to create change in the market, you got to think about, and you got to think about the evolutionary steps that'll get you to that level of change. So what we focused on as a large employer, but we're not the only one. Karen mentioned there are many other employers that are doing this. We've basically focused on a couple of programs that are designed to get you to that end result. Transparency, rewarding high performance, and giving us the ability to create better decisions at the consumer level. Bridges to Excellence, Karen mentioned briefly, is a program that's really designed to reward physicians that deliver better value and that can demonstrate that through the outcomes that they produce in managing patients on a number of chronic conditions. And I'll show you an example of the value that that's generated already. Leapfrog has recently designed a program that looks, again, not at the hospital at the highest level, but procedure by procedure, how those hospitals are doing, and not just in terms of quality, but also in terms of efficiency. And I'm going to show you the incredible gains that can be realized in the marketplace if we start measuring and if we start making hospitals accountable. And we're asking our plans to do this. I mean, as part of our sourcing specifications, it's not just are you NCQA accredited and do you have good HEDIS reports, but are you doing this stuff? Are you doing value chain management? Are you looking at your suppliers, the physicians and the hospitals in the market, and creating the right mechanisms to drive the highest performance from them? And the answer in general is no, or it's marginally measurable. We need to do a much better job and a much stricter job as purchasers in making sure that we only select plans that drive that value in the marketplace. So here's a first example of driving down and drilling down to the individual physician level. And this is a chart that shows a distribution of physicians in Kentucky between NCQA-recognized physicians under the Diabetes Recognition Program and a random sample of non-recognized physicians. Okay, and each bubble represents a physician, and they're on two scales, efficiency, which is basically how well do you deliver care and how many resources and how much is it costing us to do that, and then the effectiveness scale is just artificially split between NCQA recognized and non-NCQA recognized. And the higher you are on this efficiency scale, the worse off we are, because the standard is one. If you're below one, you're more efficient. If you're above one, you're less efficient. The size of the bubble represents the market share of the physicians in that marketplace. And again, if we were doing real value chain management, you would have the majority of the market share here. The majority of the market share is here. The other thing that this chart, I think, cautions us about is that is if all you look at is efficiency, you may drive the wrong behavior in the marketplace. So if the only thing that you focus on is cost, you may have a bunch of people going to physicians that certainly aren't using a lot of resources, but are not delivering very good care either. So we got to look at both of those things. And when we did this chart, what we realized is, first of all, there's much less variation in the total use of resources for physicians that are recognized. And that's because each and every one of them has a system in place to manage patients with diabetes. They reach out to those patients. They manage them on a continuous basis. They don't just wait for them to come for a visit. They proactively reach out to them and they manage them. As a result of which, when you compare the hard costs on an episode basis, all of this is severity adjusted. Okay, so it's 12 months worth of care. What you find is that you're saving money when patients go to diabetes physician, NCQA recognized physicians. We're saving between 10 to 15% on the cost of diabetes care for patients who go to recognized physicians. Every time one of our patients goes there, instead of going to another physician, we save money. So it's to our advantage to use then the consumer-based incentives, whether you call them health savings account or flexible accounts or even high deductible accounts, to try to drive market share. Because what the patient gets when they go to this facility will actually be lower out-of-pocket expenses for them, but also much better care. Now, you don't have an infinite supply of these guys, which is why we need to grow them. We need to find the right incentives and to create the right incentives for those physicians to manage those patients. If all you do is you give them more patients, most of them will go out of business because managing a patient with diabetes requires a lot of work. So that's why part of the Bridges to Excellence program is designed to actually give these doctors a bonus. We give them a little more money. But even with that additional bonus, we're still saving about 10 to 15% on the cost of patient diabetes. And when we look at the total cost of care for those patients, so not just the diabetes-related costs, but the total cost of care for those patients, we're saving about 5%. So there's absolutely no doubt that we can do much better, again, at managing that value chain, but we have to take the necessary steps to do that. The LeapFrog Hospital Reward Program is looking at the hospital side. So Bridges to Excellence looking at the physician side, LeapFrog Hospital Reward Program looking at the hospital side. And what we're looking at here is a chart that shows a distribution of hospitals. It's a national sample of hospitals looking at their results on cardiac bypass surgery. And again, we're measuring efficiency, and lower is better. And we're looking at effectiveness, which is quality, and the higher, the better here. You know, the better you are, obviously, in terms of quality, the better the results and the outcomes. And what this distribution shows is, again, the trap of focusing either just on efficiency, which is cost, or just on quality. The bottom line is that you can focus on both. And if you do, the results are very dramatic. This is a market where anytime you look at the relative level of performance of hospitals on a condition basis, you see arrays like these. And you see very efficient hospitals that deliver poor quality, and you see very good, high-quality hospitals that are incredibly inefficient. These are caused by what I refer to as billboard-induced pricing, right? These are usually the very high-quality, very well-known facilities, have nice billboards, and charge basically whatever they want in the marketplace because most people say we can't get around them, right? We can't manage our patients, and we can't create a network without these facilities. We beg to differ. We think that you can focus your energies on those that deliver the real value. And when you do that, again, on the cost side, the effects are dramatic. There's about a 2-to-1 variation between the lower performers and the higher performers. So if you focus on the ones that are very high quality but incredibly inefficient, you're going to end up by spending twice as much as you would on the other ones. And the moral here, just like on the physician side, is that there are incredible economic gains, value to be realized in the marketplace. But the only way you can get to that value is if you measure and if you make the system a lot more transparent than it is. So what I would end up with is basically these few statements and an acronym that maybe will help you remember what policies to take. And the first one is try to create a cooperative arrangement with the private sector. The public sector and the private sector really should be working together in any market to try to drive change. We're doing it with CMS at the national level in many markets, both with Bridges to Excellence and with LeapFrog. In many states, we're working with state purchasing agencies or state employer agencies. And I think the state of Wisconsin, just like the state of Minnesota did recently, has an opportunity to create a cooperative arrangement between the public and the private sector. Together, you can drive transparency. There's a wonderful initiative, the Wisconsin Quality Collaborative, that's really focusing on getting hospitals to report on a series of measures, but it's voluntary, right? So you have to wait years for all the hospitals to report. Why is it voluntary? Why is it that this is the sector that consumes 15% of the GNP, and we're basically allowing it not to be accountable? I mean, how does that make any sense whatsoever, right? So let's demand transparency in the system. Let's reward the good guys. If all you do is you demand transparency, but you're not willing to create rewards in the system that are going to create a business case for the high performers to stay well, to become even better, and to drive performance to levels that we've never seen, then you're missing the boat. And rewards can be both, I think, have to be both direct financial incentives, so we got to give them more money. If they're saving us a lot of money by being good, then let's return some of those savings. That's money well spent. That's what happens in normal business. If you do well, you get more market share. Sometimes you can get a slightly higher pricing. and maintain the freedom of choice for patients. I think, you know, we talked earlier and with the other speakers about the managed care backlash. No one wants to go back to that. I don't think we have to. I think patients can have the freedom to choose the hospitals and the physicians that they want to choose. But again, that decision absolutely ought to be linked to some level of financial incentive. They have to be sensitive to that decision-making process. And that's a benefit design issue. So simple things like differential co-pays, slightly differential co-insurance, not necessarily highly punitive, but linked to the right type of provider-based information, will make a very big difference in the marketplace. We're doing this in a number of markets already. In not just in Louisville, Kentucky, but in Massachusetts and in other markets where we have a lot of employees, we're waiving copays for patients going to hospitals that deliver those higher values, and we're realizing, as a result, higher value ourselves. And we're working with other employers to do that, and I would really encourage you through either individually, collectively, working with your health plans to try to drive that same value. So as you think about these, there's a little acronym just to remember is transparency, T, and then incentives, I, for both patients and providers, P, TIP. And that's just if you remember only one thing from my talk, remember this: transparency, incentives for both providers and patients, TIP. And I think that will get you to that tipping point that at least we need to reduce this incredible amount of cost waste that we see in the system. Thank you.
Yeah. 5 minutes of questions for Mr. DeBrun. Yes, but we have to speak into the microphone.
I'm David Reamer with the Wisconsin Health Project. Let's assume we have the environment you're talking about, where there's choice, there's transparency. But let's also assume that we're now at a point where an individual has already incurred a couple thousand dollars worth of costs, and therefore they're beyond any cost sharing. They're into the fully insured part, assuming there's an HSA. Once that happens, how do you provide incentives for individuals to continue to use or to choose to use higher quality, lower cost hospitals and doctors?
That's a great question, and well, there are two answers. The first one within the constraints of an HSA, and then one outside of the constraints of an HSA. Within the constraints of the HSA, I think that if people make the right decisions up front, because they're going to be sensitive to that initial deductible, those decisions will carry them forward. I mean, once you get to the point where you've reached your deductible plus your co-insurance layer and you've maxed out everything to the point where you're at 100% coverage, it means you're well within the system. If you've made the bad choices before you get to that point, it's irrelevant. So again, if you design it well enough that your mechanisms are designed so that you reduce the deductible or reduce the coinsurance, or you find a way to save money by going to the higher value providers, those are the ones that you'll be at once you reach your cap and once you've exceeded all of your personal layers of payment. The other side of it is outside of the HSA environment. And, you know, for many of the reasons that Paul brought up, we're, as a company, we're not a huge fan of the HSAs because it's not clear that it always drives the appropriate behaviors. It's a lot easier if you have a very small but very continuous coinsurance layer. So if you have a 5 or 10% coinsurance layer, and a small deductible, then you're probably going to feel that layer throughout the course of the year, almost irrespective of what your cap is. And that forces you to make the right decisions almost throughout the entire year, irrespective of what your spending is.
Question?
Oh, okay.
From Representative from Markazan. A lot of what you're talking about in transparency has to do with quality, and what the Wisconsin Hospital Association right now, I guess the ones who are listed there are the ones who are ready to show you what their quality is. But the thing that my constituents talk about with transparency, they're looking at, they're presuming that all the hospitals have quality, and what they're looking at is what the cost factors are. Now, the problem I see with looking at the cost factors, what's that ratio for coverage that people have right now? You can look at maybe the scale for what a particular cost of procedure is, but how is that affected by a particular provider's insurance coverage? So we don't have that factor in our transparency.
Well, actually, the charts all are on two axes, efficiency and effectiveness. So it's not just quality, but it's also cost. And a lot of the work that we're doing with plans, the Alliance is one, but there are many others in the country, is to try to define how to look at cost so that we can translate it into something that, A, reflects, in fact, the costs in the system in a fair way, but, B, becomes instructive for the consumer. And the way you do that is there are a lot of new software packages and methodologies and technology that basically create these, what we refer to as episodes. And the episodes are really event-driven. So if you have cardiac bypass surgery, it's going to look at costs prior to the hospitalization, including the hospitalizations and post-hospitalization. So we really get a sense of the total cost that was involved in that. And you can start linking the responsibility of that cost either to the hospital or to the physicians that were associated with the care of the patient. And again, create some at least better understanding from the patient's perspective as to what the different costs are. Then it's a benefit design issue. And it's a question of, you know, how do you create the right types of mechanisms through your benefit design? It's very difficult to do. I'm not negating it's very difficult to do. In an ideal world, right, the hospitals would put their prices up front, just like any other supplier of services. So for pregnancies, instead of saying, oh, well, you know, what should our per diem rate or our hospital inpatient hospital day rate is X, give us a package. You know, tell us how much you want to spend. You're going to charge us on this. Is it $2,000? Is it $2,500? Plans can do this in basically creating reference pricing. So there are a lot of mechanisms that you can do to force transparency, both at the price and at the quality level. And my big takeaway from the chart on the scatter plot of hospitals is, don't do one or the other. You got to do both at the same time. Because if all you show is quality data, you're going to get people going to high quality facilities that are inefficient. Potentially. And if all you show is efficiency data, you may end up with people going to very low, inexpensive places, but that deliver very poor quality.
Representative John Townsend, I represent the Fond du Lac area. I presume that General Electric, being one of our most successful corporations in the United States, as related by growth in sales and profitability, et cetera, that you are self-insured, and so that you have resources to do this type of analysis, and also that your characteristic of your employment is that it's concentrated in certain areas. And so let's use the Waukesha area, and I think GE is one of the largest employers in the state of Wisconsin if we look at the total number of employees, so that you can do this type of analysis. So let's take the Waukesha area. You do have a choice of hospitals which you can do this analysis. In my community, we have one hospital, and we have smaller employers. So how do we go about this analysis when you don't have an employer that has the resources that GE has?
That's a great question, and I would answer it in that if you're living in a community that has only one hospital, obviously people are not, you're not going to pick up and move the community. You're not going to take people and drive them 50 or 100 miles away for delivery. What you can do on the other side is drive better performance of that facility through transparency. So if I'm in a community and I've got one hospital, but my hospital ranks at the absolute bottom in terms of quality and efficiency on a whole series of procedures, then I think it's incumbent upon the local community, local government, employers, and others to put pressure on that facility to become better. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the facility itself once the information becomes transparent that they have a problem and they need to fix that problem. And in fact, there's a lot of evidence that shows that when you do have statewide public reporting of facilities in both urban and rural areas, the people who are at the bottom don't stay at the bottom very long. They improve because they're embarrassed. And I haven't met a hospital CEO or a nurse in a hospital that wants to do a bad job. They all want to do a good job. Most of the time, they have no idea how good or bad they're doing. So at least unveiling the performance and making it transparent to everyone is a first step. And then you can work with them to get them better. And you can create reward mechanisms so that if they're at the bottom tier, then make sure that they get a reward if they improve their performance. And if they get to the middle or if they get to an upper tier, let's reward them. You're not going to be able to give them more market share because they have a monopoly, but maybe they deserve a little better if they do better. And so it's that kind of cooperative effort, I think, that gets you a long way in those single hospital markets.
Last session, Representative Underheim and I introduced a transparency bill, and one of the difficulties was that providers don't charge the same prices. They charge all different kinds of prices. And there was no way a particular customer could know what price he was going to be charged just by looking at usual and customary prices. How, and GE can deal with that because you have clout. How could we design a transparency in the public sector or in the sector so that individuals who are going to be, when we're talking about consumer-driven healthcare, would have be able to have some assurance that they are, of what they're going to be charged?
Yeah, I mean, just to dispel that myth, we actually have very little clout. I wish we had a lot of clout, but we really actually don't have a whole heck of a lot of clout, because in most markets, even though we have a lot of employees, the percentage of our employees in the local market is, you know, a couple percent, 3%. So we can't really do anything by ourselves, and we really have to work with others. Again, the way you get to the cost is you can't do it individually. You have to do it collectively. So if you take a state like if you do it at a state level, and you ask, for example, all the plans that operate in the state to combine and aggregate their claims information in a common pool, you'll be able to get a very good analysis of the relative level of efficiency of any provider in the marketplace. And price becomes a mechanism that's negotiated then at the plan level. And again, for the beneficiary, it becomes a way of, you know, doing normal market mechanisms. But what you look at an aggregate level is resource use. And it's astonishing. I mean, you have physicians that are very defensive in their treatment patterns and prescribe at a rate that's about five times the norm, or order radiology tests at about five times the norm. And that you can pick up if you aggregate claims across the multiple payers in the marketplace. And I would encourage you to think about that, because that is one way of piercing the veil. An individual plan, especially with what Scott said earlier, with the fairly low market share and low concentration in this market, you're never going to be able to get there. We can't get there. So it really has to be driven at the state level with the collaboration of everyone and really engaging the plans in pooling information. You know, making sure that their proprietary stuff is held secret, but at least getting to that level of data. And I can tell you that what you find is astonishing. And many states have started going down this pathway, and I think it's the next revolution.
Senator Olson.
I look at the healthcare industry as sort of like going to the supermarket and with a basket, and there's no prices on the shelves, and you don't pick out any products. Somebody goes with you and fills your basket. At the end of the checkout line, you really don't. You didn't have a say as a patient on what you bought. It's, you know, you got enough food for the week, but what you bought and how much it cost, really, as a patient, you don't have a whole lot of input. Are we really saying now that in this scenario that somebody's going to be looking at the food you bought and how much it cost and saying, you know, that shopper, which i.e. the person who put the stuff in your basket, i.e. your doctor, could have done a little better job. You could have had enough food for the week, and it could have been a little healthier, and it could have been a little cheaper. And if you're a good picker outer of food for this person, we're going to pay you a little bit more. And if you, you know, bought lots of stuff you probably shouldn't have for that person, we're going to reimburse you or pay you less. Is that what you're really talking about? Is at the end of the process?
That's a great analogy, and if you don't mind, I'll steal it from you and use it elsewhere, because that's fantastic. That's exactly what we need to talk about.
Jean Hundertmark from Clintonville. This question is directed to Paul, actually, now that we've opened it up to the group. On the HSAs and HRAs, who determines if the cost of a procedure would be paid, and what types of providers are covered? So are you looking at eye care, dental, chiropractic, alternative medicines, massage therapy? How far down the line can you go, and who then makes a determination on whether that's paid or not?
On the HRA, it's up to the employer. An employer can decide whether or not the money in the HRA could be used for any of those things. And they can be if an employer wants to allow that. In fact, I saw one plan that would let you, where the employer let employees use the money in the account to go buy insurance from a different insurance company. So it's completely up to the employer. There are also rules regarding inpatient versus, in-network versus out-of-network physicians, and you know whether or not you could use, you know, how the money could be used there. That's more important, I think, on the health savings account side, where I don't think you're going to see very many plans that would cover the types of benefits you're talking about, but they have no control over the account. So once the money's in the account, it could be used for any qualified medical expense, such as massage therapy. I think a prescription needs to be written for that in order for it to be qualified, or chiropractic care, vision care, dental care. And what I see happening is a number of plans not providing those benefits anymore, but letting people use the money in the account to pay their out-of-pocket expenses associated with those types of benefits. That's one way to do it. I think the market's still evolving, and we're going to see how it evolves and how these benefits are treated under various plans. It's the same with preventive care, because the one thing you could do under an HSA plan is carve out preventive services and not subject preventive services to the high deductible. And I've heard both. Insurers and employers that are self-insured are going to provide very comprehensive preventive services in order to keep people from reaching their deductible and becoming the high-cost claims that then have no incentive to control their spending. I've also heard it said that a lot of the plans out there are providing very limited preventive services because it defeats the purpose of trying, of subjecting as much as possible to cost sharing under a high deductible. So it's still too early to tell how it's going to play out, but basically anything is possible right now. We'll know in a year or two exactly which way the plans go.
Yeah, my question is for Paul too, so you can just stay put. You, because of the time constraints, you skipped over cafeteria accounts. I'm curious, we're creating all these new vehicles, and yet the Feds still refuse to repair this incredible dinosaur with its anti-rollover provisions that causes everybody to go out and buy three pairs of eyeglasses at the end of the year like I did last year, which is absurd. It's wasteful. It's ridiculous. And yet we refuse to fix it. At the same time, we're going to invest tens of millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars in creating new vehicles that do very similar things. So I'm curious about that.
I think we're making it more complicated rather than less complicated by having different types of accounts and having all these different types of rules on how the accounts can be used. I personally think that HSAs are going to result in fewer people with flexible spending accounts. I'm a very good planner when it comes to my flex account. Yet if I had an HSA, I'd stop with the flex account for a year or put very little money in, just money for things like dental care that I knew I could use it for without having to wait until I used up the money in the HSA. I don't think most people even would plan as well as I do. I'm not that concerned about people losing money in an FSA at the end of the year or using it up on three pairs of eyeglasses. If you look at vision care, we spend less than 2% of health care on vision care. It doesn't account for much. So any unnecessary use at the end of the year isn't really doing anything. Dental care, it's probably a good thing for people to go to the dentist even if it's at the end of the year and use up their FSA. So that's not a bad thing. There's only one study that I'm aware of that's looked at use patterns in an FSA, and there's generally very little money left over at the end of the year that people go out and use unnecessarily. So it's just not a concern of mine, but I think we're just making things overcomplicated with different types of accounts. And I think if we allowed a rollover, and what they're really talking about is a $500 rollover, it would only create a lot of $500 accounts because there wouldn't be the fear of losing that money.
One more question in the back.
Senator Wirch, and a question for the panel. And I don't understand some of the things I've heard this morning compared to the reality where I come from. Let me give you an example. You talk about transparency. I attended a so-called oversight committee for a hospital on their heart unit. And, of course, they wanted us to believe that their heart surgery was better than all their competitors. Did a slide presentation like this, handouts that were all collected before we left the room. There's one sign of transparency. And you mentioned 50% of the people illiterate, medically illiterate. I can see why. So the question is to get accurate ways of comparing institutions. Now, all the legislators in here are political animals. We all got elected. And the dynamics have changed in our areas. I'll give you an example. My area used to be big unions, manufacturing. They're gone now. They've gone to China. Who are the big movers in the area?
The hospitals.
The healthcare institutions. They have the most employees, the most clout. We had a county executive who tried to save money by going outside the area and bringing in healthcare providers. He was turned out of office in the next election. Hospitals, the rumor was he was considered not loyal to his area. So I think the point I'm making is that we are supposed to have oversight of the institutions, and a lot of times the institutions are driving the dynamic in our area, either through the local business organizations or through their political clout.
Quick comments from anyone on the panel?
Well, no, I mean, let me address that, because, you know, we happen to be in a, I think, as a company, in a delicate position. We sell to the healthcare industry. In fact, that's the business that we have in this state. You know, we manufacture technology for adoption by hospitals. And yet, at a corporate level, what we're saying, and the CEO of our company, who used to work in Milwaukee, is very clear about this. You know, basically his statement to all of us is that the system cannot survive based on its inefficiency, and that profiting from that inefficiency is not sustainable. And so we will continue to drive change in the market, even if it means that we're upsetting our customers. And they know that. And I think at the end of the day, you know, our primary responsibility is to the people that we serve. And the people that we serve are the families. And, you know, the reason why I think most people don't focus on this enough is because the accidents that take place, the people that die, die one at a time. They don't die all together. But what you have going on in this state is probably the equivalent of a school bus full of children dying every year needlessly because of medical errors. You've got a few buses of people running off the road and dying because of medical errors. But they all happen individually, one at a time, and we don't focus on it. But if you had a school bus full of kids that ran off the road and all of them died, you'd have investigations for 6 months to try to fix the problem. It's your responsibility to do that. And yeah, it's going to take a lot of courage, which is why I'm encouraging you to work with the private sector employers, who in this state are all suffering from high expenses. And you're right that the hospitals are the big employers and they've got the clout, but they're also employers, and they also have to pay those healthcare premiums. And many of the leading institutions in the country are recognizing that they're suffering as well. So it's a vicious cycle, and we just have to, you know, do something about it and have the courage to say, look, it, whatever happens, happens, but we got to make a stand. And I can tell you that as a company, whatever happens, happens. If we lose some customers, we lose some customers. But you know what? At the end, the system will be better.
Thank you all for coming. Our next seminar will be in October. Topic still to be determined.